The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Experience lightning fast speeds and Sky's best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
Right then, it's 9:27 and I want to introduce you to Mr. Clive Clark. Good morning, Clive.
Good morning, Ryan.
Nice to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Oh, very well, thank you.
For people who haven't got your back catalogue to hand, will you remind us of how we would know you from watching you in the sporting field?
I played for Ireland, obviously, at every level, and then I played in England for Stoke City, West Ham, Sunderland and Leicester City.
So your credentials are impeccable, Clive, let's face it. And you were at a barbecue last Saturday evening watching a particular match that had become very famous, a little bit infamous. Tell me what you thought when you were seeing what was happening with Christian Eriksen on the pitch.
Yeah, obviously we went around to a friend's house to watch the game and seeing the incident sort of unravel, and the first reaction was he's had the same as I had. Just the collapse like that on the field, you think straight away. Well, I think straight away. It's obviously very serious, and it was a cardiac arrest.
And you had you probably had a little bit of a trigger yourself, going, "I was that soldier."
Yeah, no, definitely. It's like I've kind of lived that, what he's gone through, what he went through then, and what he's going through now. I've experienced it. I didn't do it on the football field, but I done it at half time. But it was in the game scenario. And thankfully for him and for me, I think that's probably one of the safest places to have a cardiac arrest.
Of course. We go back to your story then, if you don't mind, Clive, to 2007.
Yeah, I was a Sunderland player, but I was on loan at Leicester City. Mm-hmm. And I'd just gone there on loan, as you do in football sometimes. I fell out with Mr. Roy Keane at Sunderland. It wouldn't be the first one. I went to Leicester City on loan, and it was a Tuesday night playing against Nottingham Forest, which is a big East Midlands derby game in England. And at half time, I was walking off the field. Didn't feel particularly great, but just thought a bit lethargic or whatever. Sat down at a bottle of water. Manager speaking to me, not really registering anything he's saying. And next thing I know is that I've woke up in the back of an ambulance after having a cardiac arrest, which was obviously very frightening for everyone. Except me, because obviously I was KO'd.
Well, that's the fascinating thing. As you say, you're knocked out, so you're not aware of the storm. That you're in the eye of the storm. You don't know what's happening around you until you're told afterwards. Your heart stopped, did it?
Yeah, my heart stopped for 4 minutes. So it was like, obviously, you know, a collapse. I banged my head off the floor, just sort of fell forward. And obviously, all my teammates were in the changing room. I'm lucky enough that, you know, the physio at Leicester City, he's just recently left Leicester City, Dave Rennie, reacted really quickly. And there was an A&E doctor who was working for Nottingham Forest on the evening, which was very thankful as well, because GPs don't have to deal with this on a daily basis, where obviously an A&E doctor does, and obviously much more confident in that scenario. They reacted. They got me going on the fourth goal of the defibrillator, which was they were struggling to revive me, and it was very worrying times for them. But luckily enough, I think it was on the third one, they got me going for a few seconds, and then on the fourth one, they actually got me going properly with a bit of adrenaline, I think. And thankfully, recovered quite well, but my heart stopped for 4 minutes at that time.
I'm not a medical person, Clive, but 4 minutes strikes me as a long time to have no heartbeat. What did they tell you about that?
Yeah, I think for every minute that your heart stops, it brings up much more more problems, you know, with other organ failure, and obviously the blood flow to your brain and things like that. So, you know, to walk away relatively all right after it is was a very lucky boy.
You got the four goes on the defibrillator. And just to put it into context, Christian Eriksen had how many goes?
I think it was one for Christian, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, so that would illustrate the gravity of your situation. Tell me...
It was pretty bad.
Tell me about waking up in the ambulance, though, and looking around. I mean, you would have been probably still in your kit, come on.
I was still in my kit, yeah. Obviously, I had my jersey sliced all the way through the middle. But I obviously still had my socks and shorts and everything else on. And I woke up and my head was a bit sore, my chest was sore. They broke a rib doing CPR on me that night. So I woke up obviously with a sore rib and a sore head, and then looking down, I was like obviously trying to take it all in, and had one of the paramedics obviously in the back of the ambulance talking to me a little bit, and you know, took a few minutes for everything to register.
Your wife got a phone call in the middle of it all.
Yeah, obviously my wife, I had a house up in the northeast, and I just literally come down to the Midlands, and we were staying with her mum and dad, and she got a phone call, and we only had a 9-month, 10-month-old baby at the time as well, so we were staying with me and laws, and she gets a phone call to say, look, at you know, things aren't looking great for Clive. Because obviously I'm in the changing room, only with the doctors and medical team, and the manager and the CEO and everyone of Leicester, they're all on the football field, and my teammates. So she gets a phone call saying, look, essentially, you know, Clive might have passed away. Which is obviously, horrendous news for her.
That is quite a shocking, somebody kind of jumped the gun, to say the least. How does she respond to that?
Well, I think after the third go, one of the guys who was in the room walked out and told the manager, saying, look, it's not looking good. And then obviously that news was sort of relayed back to someone who then, you know, wanted to be, I think he wanted to get in touch with my wife before broken the news, because obviously because it was a live game, stuff was happening on Sky Sports News and things like that. And, you know, there was no, you know, social media as much as it is today. So I think he just wanted to get in touch with her and sort of break the news as such, which was, he just said, look, it's not looking great. And then thankfully they rang her back saying, look, he's come around.
God, well, your poor wife. That's shocking. I mean, I'm sorry for you too, but I just, to be told that and hanging on a thread, wondering what the hell's going on.
Yeah, no, it was obviously very distressing for everyone at the time. You know, obviously my family back in Wicklow, they were obviously all worried, and I managed to be able to speak to them first. To be fair, my brother and my father were. Were ringing, and finally got in touch with me. I spoke to them when I came around when I was in the A&E critical care bit.
When you got surgery, then of course, what did they do to you? And you have to remind me, of course, what age you were at the time, Clive.
Yeah, I was 27. You know, obviously meant to be coming into my prime as a footballer. You know, played hundreds of games, like back home in Ireland. Obviously played a lot of Gaelic football with Wicklow, and obviously played, you know, a lot of football matches, obviously soccer matches over there as well. And then obviously I played nearly 300 games as a professional. So I played like thousands of games in my life, and then to wake up at 27, being told you've had a cardiac arrest. They done all these testing. I was in hospital for 10 days, and they done every test under the sun.
Yeah.
And found that my heart was actually, you know, the fittest they've ever come across. And they actually had to take me off the monitors at night because of the alarm, because your resting heartbeat goes off at 30 beats a minute. My resting heartbeat was lower than 30 when I was asleep. So they had to take the alarm monitors off me, monitors.
Really?
So done every test under the sun as they could do then. And they came back that they couldn't actually pinpoint any heart condition. Other than obviously they knew my heart went into a rhythm that obviously stopped the bottom chamber of my heart from pumping blood. So it had to be, they gave me an internal defibrillator and implanted in my chest.
Amazing.
So I had that surgery while, I think it was like on the 8th day or whatever, after my, after my cardiac arrest, and obviously in the meantime being told that, you know, you'd never play football again. So it was a mix of emotions for everyone.
You had a kind of physical shock to the system, and including a defibrillator now in your, which I suppose what it does, sends an electric shock to your heart whenever it stops or something like that. And
yeah.
That's one thing. But then you had the psychological horror show of being told it's over. 27 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, you were on the cusp of such greatness as well. You were in the middle of greatness, but you had more to come.
Yeah, like obviously, hopefully, it was only halfway through my career, and you know, it was hard to take that, because all I ever wanted to do was be a footballer. You know, anyone would tell you, see me growing up, all you ever see me was with a football, going up and down the road, and you know, it was really hard to take, and it was such a mixed emotions, because obviously, you know, I've got a kid, 9 months, 10 months old, a little girl. Obviously, who was my everything at the time, and was still is. But you know, then be told that you can't play football. It was like, you know, it was such a mix of emotions. So you're very relieved and thankful on one side, but then, you know, you're good, and then you start worrying because obviously that was my form of income, and you know, we're not paid. We weren't paid the same as the players are today. So, you know, yeah, you earned a really good living, but, you know, you're only 27, you've got a long life to live. You can't, I couldn't live off the money I made. So I had to then start thinking, what am I going to do? Because obviously you come over to England at 16, not really got an education or anything either. So there's a lot of worry behind the scenes, but a lot of, you know, thankful sort of to everyone that helped me be here today.
A couple of things I wanted to ask you about. One of them was, there was a piece in the Irish Mirror talking about Conor Murphy, Irish soccer player, had a similar ordeal, and it was revived by his teammates after cardiac arrest during a game. And he talked about just what you said there a minute ago, that he wasn't aware of the trauma that was happening because it was going on to him, and he was out of kind of KO'd, as you say. But the people around him who saw it, like the teammates you saw on the pitch on Saturday, and I don't know if your teammates talked to you about it afterwards, they were quite traumatised by what was happening in front of their eyes. Does that make sense? That
I think it's a massive shock to the system, and I think, you know, not a huge fan of UEFA, but I think the idea of telling them they had to play on that evening or the next day was absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah.
You know, it just shows you, like, you know, money comes into every scenario, but me personally, my teammate, like Leicester, when I went to Leicester City, they were a good side. They had lots of new players, talented players. They end up getting relegated at the end of that season. People don't see that. Fabrice and Mumba, so the two of us are probably the two who survived that similar scenario to Ericsson in the last 15 years, whatever. Bolton got relegated that season as well. So, you know, the mental traumas, the players must be a massive effect to my teammates. Obviously, I wasn't lucky enough to kick a ball again, but it must be very hard for them to push themselves to the limit because people don't realise that, you know, they're quick to say players are overpaid, this, that, and the other, but they are physical specimens. They do work extremely hard and day in, day out. And, you know, it's very demanding, the English football is. So there's a lot of games that you play, but play more games in England than any other country. And the demands on the body are huge.
The because I was kind of watching it from, obviously, from a distance. I wouldn't have the same expertise that you would have, Clive, but I got the sense that the spin on it was that Ericsson himself had kind of given the thumbs up to the game going ahead, that the two teams were asked, do you want to? And they said yes, as opposed to anyone with a gun to the head. Would that be fair to say?
I don't think so. I think, you know, they weren't going to sleep that night. So I think they just wanted the game out of the way more than wanting to play. I think, you know, they knew full well that, you know, they didn't want to go out the next day, prepare all over, you know, bearing in mind they knew he was up and well, but they didn't know the full extent of things at that time because they wouldn't have, they would have just been hearing a little bit back from the medical team, but they wouldn't have known the full extent because obviously they wouldn't have ran any tests on him, you know, that an hour after the game. By the time we went to the hospital and got stabilised and all, they wouldn't be running any tests, that many tests. So I just think it was wrong for them to play the game. It should have been done at a later stage in the tournament.
Yeah, it was. It all felt quite hasty, but, and you'd know, so I'll take your word on that. Has your heart stopped since?
Yes, yeah. I was, well, it didn't quite stop, but I was in hospital again. I was in Ireland, I was at the Curragh racetrack. I used to buy and sell horses, and I love, like, horse racing and the breeding side of horse racing. So I was at the Curragh one day at the sales, and we were, you know, we were just walking around, me and my friends, and, you know, my trainer, Fozzie Stack, down in down Tipperary, and we were all at the sales, wandering around, whatever, and the machine went off. And to be honest, I thought it was a horse kicking me in the back, because it'd never gone off before, and that's the kind of impact you have, because obviously, you know, you get an electric shock internally, but it was like, it was sort of in my back. And I turned around, thought a horse had kicked me, and it took it. I didn't collapse, because apparently sometimes you're meant to collapse if your device goes off, but I didn't, and it took a couple of minutes for me to realise what exactly went on, and then I started panicking a little bit, so I got my friend who was with me. I was staying in Ireland at the time, so I had my car there, so we drove to St. Vincent's, and I went into the A&E there. My wife was over with me, so she met me at the hospital, and they took me to A&E, and then they quickly moved me up to the cardiac risk unit because of, you know, my heart was so irregular, it was all over the place. So obviously, you know, it was still, this is about 2.5 years after my initial cardiac arrest.
Yeah,
so I ended up in St. Vincent's for 3 or 4 days.
It is amazing, Clive, that we're talking today largely on foot of what happened at a football tournament on Saturday, and what happened to Christian Eriksen, because what you're talking about and your own story is so important for Irish people to be listening to today, including myself, because we need to look after our hearts.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, like sometimes, you know, you can be the fittest person as well, you know, and that's why you need to have defibrillators locally,
yeah,
definitely around every sport and venue, you know, whether it's amateur, professional, semi-pro, whatever it may be, you know, and that's for every sport and event. You know, we love our sport in Ireland, and, you know, I think people are fitter now in Ireland than probably ever been. You know, we don't go home forever seeing people running and out walking and everything else. So, you know, it is very important to look after our heart, but it's also important that we have the right medical training, you know, so if someone does collapse beside you, like someone around them do know CPR, and, you know, having the defibrillator locally, which, to be fair, over the last, you know, 14 years since my one, going back home, I see a big improvement on that side of, you know, when I do go to a sporting event or, you know, in a town or whatever, I do see quite a lot of defibrillators locally. So, you know, I think the awareness is happening over there, but I think it needs to get better and better.
The Matter Heart Foundation do tremendous work in this regard.
They're brilliant. I'm one of 8 kids, and obviously what happened to me was in England, but obviously all my family are in Ireland, and the Matter Foundation went and tested all my family, because obviously, you know, we've done all the heart trace and all the tracking, took these tests. So there's a thing called long QT, which is like a long heartbeat, which, you know, I've got one of them. I haven't actually been diagnosed with long QT, but I have an extra heartbeat, and then I have a time when my sort of heart skips a beat.
Yeah.
And they done all that testing for my family, and they were absolutely brilliant, and it's a fantastic foundation.
Yeah, and you know, Michael from Carlo was on to say, at the age of 29, my heart stopped for 4 days after open heart surgery for a leaking valve. I was down for 12 minutes, and thankfully they got me back. I was in the right place, the right time, but it was traumatic, not just for myself, but for my family. I mean, 4 minutes I thought was a lifetime, but 12 is another prospect altogether. But people echoing what you're saying this morning, Clive.
That's brilliant, and you know the reason why I'm doing sort of radio interviews is to raise awareness, because
yeah,
you know, not everyone's as lucky as myself and Christian Eriksen to be surrounded by all the medical staff, and, you know, have the defibrillators right on hand, and people who know how to use them, and people who know to do CPR and all that. You know, it's important that awareness is raised.
What part of Wicklow are you from?
I'm from Newtown, Mount Kennedy.
Oh, sure, not well. And do you get back home much?
I do, yeah. Well, obviously, in the last year, it's been very difficult. But yeah, I always get home for the summer with the kids, and then try and get back 3 or 4 times during the rest of the year. So yeah, try and spend as much time as we can.
Okay, and in terms of career then, you went from 27-year-old being told it's over. I presume you had to regroup emotionally and mentally to try and face the next chapter. Can I ask you what you decided to head for? You mentioned horses at one stage.
Yeah, well, I had a horse racing business as well, which was, that was more a bit of fun with friends and all. And we were lucky, we had some really good horses down with Tommy and Fuzzy Stack down to Tipperary. You're great people. I moved back to Ireland for 9 months, sort of not knowing what to do with myself. And then the guy who represented me, at the time my agents weren't big, and I went and worked at a law firm back in England. Didn't know whether to go and try and do a law degree or do something else in sport. Started doing the coaching badges and everything. Then they had a sports agency, so I ended up working for them. And I've been working as a sports agent for the last 12 years or so.
A very important job. People need to be minded, as you know.
Try and look after them, and, you know, make sure that they understand that the career doesn't go on forever, and, you know, try and give them the best possible advice. And it's a hard industry, because when you're 18, you don't want to listen to, you know, think about the, you know, what might happen after your career, and all I think, if they're going to play for Man United and earn the same money as Paul Pogba or whoever, you know. So it can be tricky at times, but you need to be aware that, yeah, that's brilliant, but you also got to think of the other things and after football and what you're going to do with a career and everything, because I know full well that it can stop at any moment.
You did something that very few people listening to this program will have done, which is you fell out with Roy Keane. What happened?
To be honest, it was sort of made a mountain out of nothing, really. It was, we played away at Stoke, which is my old team. I played most of my football at Stoke City, and my wife had just given birth to our first child. So we played Stoke on a Tuesday, Wednesday evening. And as I was finished the game, came out of the changing room, a load of the staff who were at the club gave me, you know, little baby gifts and things like that for, mm-hmm. for my wife. And all. So it was really nice. I had about 6 or 7 bags. And like Tony Poulos, who's a Stoke manager, I think he gave us a few bits and bobs as well. So anyway, I got on the coach and he's like, oh, here he comes. Here's Mr. Stoke City. All these baby bags and all that. And he was obviously annoyed. We actually lost the game. We played really well. We got beat last minute 2-1 with the game, which we should have won. So God, he was frustrated. And obviously I was frustrated. He said something to me, like smart or whatever. And I can't bite my tongue. So I said something smart back to him. Anyway, the next day I gone in and he had me training with the reserves after praising me after the game for playing quite well.
Okay.
So I didn't take kindly to that, so I went and seen him and told him a few home truths, and I went to Coventry on loan about 4 days later.
All because of a few baby bags, Clive.
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah. It could all have been so different. I'm glad to say, having met Roy Keane in the last couple of years, he's a new man. He's completely chilled out, Clive.
He's mellowed, yeah. I see him all the time.
Do you?
He can be frosty with us at first, because obviously I'm doing my job and he was doing his job as assistant manager, yeah. as a manager, and you know all that. And I run into him occasionally still. We just nod at each other and go our merry ways.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I've enjoyed our conversation, Clive. Thank you so much for your time this morning. I wish you and your family well, and stay healthy, stay well.
And you, all the best. Thanks
nice
very
to
much.
Talk to you. Thank you very much.
Take
That's care. Clive Clark joining us on the phone. He's one of those, isn't he, one of those guys who left Newtown and Kennedy and Wicklow, but he never changed his accent. I always think it's quite interesting somebody spends so much time abroad that they just stay true to who they are. And what a story, what a salutary tale on the programme this morning at 11 minutes to 10.